Hello again, everybody, and welcome. This is Julie Knutson with episode 44 of Training the Pointing Labrador. No naked report today. We're just right in the middle of learning to hold and starting ear pinch. One thing I will say about that, we have a big project, been underway for a while, where we're going to start filming individual processes, basic obedience, force fetch, collar conditioning, de-chase, that's a big one. Filming some things and getting them available on the, I believe the website or maybe YouTube stuff. So that's going to be happening so people can actually see it, because I know you can listen, you can read, but actually watching somebody do it helps a lot. But one of the things, and this is going to be a little bit different project than other videos that you've seen, is that, for example, in basic obedience, which is my primary topic today, you're going to see a series of dogs. You're going to see a series of dogs that are doing it correctly, like you normally do in a video. And then there's going to be a series where you see dogs that resist or don't comply or kind of give up or just try to avoid the whole thing. And I'm going to showcase a number of dogs so that you see what happens when it doesn't work the way it's supposed to and how you work through, you know, different kinds of problems with different kind of dogs, and try and give people an idea of how it really is, not just the conceptual, this is how it's supposed to work. Because then, you know, you go get your dog and you leash him up and you start your deal, and they do completely unexpected things and they don't do what the video said, and then you're kind of lost. So it's a different approach. It's kind of an experimental thing that we're going to try to just show people this is how it really is when no one's looking. And this is some of the ways that you approach it, some of the things to try. So it, you know, kind of might be an eye-opener for some people. But that's our latest project starting next week. And I hope people that are interested in this tune in when we start making that stuff available. So I'm pretty excited about that. And Naked will be on there too. So everybody gets to see her and maybe some of her siblings and some other dogs that that are here that we're just going to show you kind of the real world of dog training. Not how pretty it is when you show somebody with a dog that's already trained. So that's the next project that's actually starting up. So back to the topic. It's going to be fun to show this to people on a video. But I'm going to talk about, I've taken a series of questions that I've gotten in. And I don't want to be real specific. Nobody wants their name and dog problem out there in front of everybody. But I'm going to talk about probably the single most important aspect to training an animal for anything at all. And it falls under the terminology basic obedience. Now, when people hear the word obedience, it has a lot of interesting connotations. It just sounds like, you know, the Egyptian slave thing, obedience. You know, you carry the heavy rocks up the hill over to there, and that's all you do until you, you know, die. That's obedience means just do whatever I say. And dog training, it's far more complicated of a concept, and it's not that demeaning, and it's not that just do what I say and that's that. There's so much more to this, but it's very hard to put into words. If you've ever watched some of the really good trainers, and I mean really good trainers, you know, it's such a part of what they do every day that it's not even conscious. And it's important if you are really interested in training a dog, that one, you be aware of that this dog obedience thing is more than just a little concept and more than just a little series of exercises you carry out. But it's something in your approach and your understanding of working with a dog. So I'm going to make an attempt at breaking this down and making it somewhat understandable. But dogs do a lot of things that we don't like them to do. I had somebody here just yesterday whose dog I've been working with now for a little while, and dog did really well. And as soon as we were done, the dog just jumped right on him, all four legs, just bam. And he looked at me and said, is that okay? You know, like I'm going to tell him what's okay with his dog or not. And I said, I don't know. What do you think? Do you like it? He said, no. Right. So the dog was clearly showing that even though he could do this fundamental obedience exercises that we'd been doing and pretty demandingly, that as soon as it was over, he thought, okay, that nonsense is over. Now I can just do whatever I want and I can physically assault you. So, and he's wondering what you do about that. And I said, well, never mind the dog. It's you that we got to deal with. Which is just an eye opener for people to realize that the responsibility for virtually everything falls right squarely on their shoulders. And that really is a fact, but it's important to understand, you know, this whole dynamic between a dog and a person. So I get many, many questions about, you know, my dog, he does this. He only breaks at hunt tests. You know, I'm running a blind, he'll only sit on about the second or third whistle, and after that, he just autopilot. I had a question recently also, somebody whose dog, who had been bred twice that year, when he goes to an event, so you're off leash, right? You're just free. His nose is on the ground constantly, just looking and sniffing for females everywhere. Didn't even see the flyer go down at an AKC hunt test. Didn't even see a flyer go down. And this is a motivated dog, very interested in doing the work, well-trained, and does this stuff. But he was more obsessed with smells and things like that. And so he wanted to know, you know, what the trick was for that. How do you keep your dogs from doing that? Like there was a thing, you know, well, whenever your dog is interested in the opposite sex, then, you know, you do steps 1, 2, and 3. And there really aren't steps 1, 2, and 3. And the problem was a little bit misidentified. And one of the examples that I like to use is if you have a sore on your arm, you know, the sore kind of pops up, you know, and you think, I must have bumped that somewhere. And it, you know, you just put a little first aid cream on it, and you look back about 3-4 days later, still there, still just the same, a little bit bigger. Now it's itching, you know, and you oh, geez, I better cover it up, or I better, and you ask somebody, have you seen this? What do you do when you have something like this? Oh, you just need to cover it up. No, you need to uncover it. Well, you need to use this cream. And it doesn't go away, right? And you're probably with me right now. You go, geez, that sore on the arm is probably not the problem. It's a symptom of a problem. Something might be wrong on a grander scale there that is just showing itself as this thing on your arm that doesn't go away. So virtually all this stuff that people describe, you know, oh, my dog does this and he doesn't do that, are symptoms of a more fundamental and all throughout the dog kind of a problem. So the problem that was described to me, but in his mind, it was isolated. Oh, no, he's fine. He does great at training. Everything's good. It's only when we go a hunt test. Then he's terribly interested in females. And I suspect that that's not the only place that this I got something else to do kind of problem shows up. But I talked him through it because he was looking for, you know, the fix on this deal. So we were breaking it down. I said, so you go to the line with this dog at an event, and he is doing nothing more than sniffing the ground, looking around. You're sitting in the holding blind where all the other dogs have sat. So if a female's been there, there's female smell. And he's just looking and looking. He goes, well, you understand. I did breed him twice this year. And I understand that. And I'm sure that was awesome. And he remembered that and really liked it. But we're, you know, now we're doing something else. And so you go to the line, and the dog is not thinking about you at all. Right? He's thinking about something that is far more compelling to him. Well, yeah, but. I said, no, let's just stop. So he loves this stuff. He loves flyers. He loves to do this. But he would rather go sniff around for something that's even more compelling, at least at that moment to him, than birds going down. That's your problem. Is he knows what you're there for. You guys have practiced this and run some events. He knows why you're there. But it's more important to him that he check to see if there's been any girls there that are breedable, or just what the girls have been that are there. And that's on his mind, not you and what you're asking. And that is your fundamental problem. And when your dog is running a blind and after a couple whistles decides that they just can't stop for you anymore, that they're going to just go hunt it up for you, another problem I hear about frequently, there's a dog who has decided that they would rather do what they choose to do and not care about what you're thinking or what you're asking. And when your dog breaks at hunt tests only, there's always these little stipulations there. Oh, no, never in training. Of course not, because you're prepared there. They only break in hunt tests because, again, right there, they are thinking more about what they would like to do than what you are asking. So the same problem is all throughout all these dogs. The dog cares less about what you think than about what they would like to do. And it manifests itself in a zillion ways. One of the other ones that I hear for you guys with younger dogs is, oh, my dog has really good obedience. On leash, off leash, real good. I can heel sit. Unless those neighbor kids come out with their dog. And if they take off going across the lawn or whatever, then my dog's all bets are off. So once again, as long as there's nothing better to do, then they listen to you. And as soon as something a little more compelling than you comes along, you don't exist anymore. Same exact problem. Little puppies, older dogs, expensive events, the whole thing. The dog in their head, something more compelling than you came up. And there is your problem, is that throughout your training and the very different things that you do with your dog, you have, however unintentionally, taught this dog that sometimes it needs to do what you say and sometimes, you know, not so much. Now, somebody's listening here and they're going, you know, that's not true. I train my dog all month or all week long or all year long, and they do really well. And I make sure that, you know, they sit and they don't, you know, that they go where I send them, and I make sure they stop on a whistle. And, you know, they just do everything I need. So when I go to a hunt test, and this was two topics ago, I believe, then they quit listening. They don't handle, they break, they do this stuff. And I don't understand because, right, they're so good in training. And I'm right on top of them, and I make sure everything's good. Right? Until you go to an event and suddenly something is more compelling than you and they tune you out and do their own thing. Same problem. So when I tell you, when I talk about dogs that in their head don't take you as seriously as you need them to, it is because you have not ingrained that kind of thought process in their head. And that is the purpose of basic obedience. That's what it's all about. So heel sitting here, whether you get little guys or you got these big guys, when you go and you do obedience and say you've got one of those dogs, they'll do it all perfect. They'll do on leash, off leash, kids running around, doesn't matter. They'll do. And so you heel and sit and they do what you ask because you've done a good job showing them what you like, right? So, and they heel and sit and you go, see, it's good. There's nothing wrong here. There's nothing I can do any better. Again, what element is missing in that is that you have not created the situation or the thought process which really, really trumps anything else that's going to happen, so that they always default to, really like to do this, but they told me to sit. I got to pay attention to him or her. I've got to do that. That's the thing that needs to be, that's basic obedience. That's how you keep a lot of these problems from developing. Now, I'll give you an example of how that starts, so it's understanding with people with young dogs. So when you start on a dog that's 5, 6, 7 months old, you start teaching, doing the leash work with them, right? Heel sitting here. Now, believe it or not, this stuff starts way, way back. But to get people to be that aware of a puppy is kind of a tough thing to do. But so you're going to start your leash work on the dog. And that's why I'm eager to start this video series. So you get them to walk next to you and sit, then you reach down, pet them, right? Oh, good dog. I had some of that recently. Every time the dog, they just loved the dog so much and they'd been missing it, come to visit. So every time the dog did anything, oh, good dog, touching it. Well, the dog is not thinking so much about, oh, I need to try really hard. It's just like, oh, this is so fun. Oh, I'm so glad dad's here. So I wasn't getting a whole lot out of the exercise for the dog, but the person was having a heck of a good time. But when you start this, you have to have clarity in your mind that is extreme if you want to do it well. And I mean extreme. This isn't about going through the motions. I'll walk and I'll sit and I'll walk and I'll sit and I'll tell them when to heal. And if they do it, I'm all happy. Right? That's not at all what I'm talking about. So you need to just in your mind, in your head, kind of break it down. So when I say, and I'm going to use how I do stuff, it doesn't mean you have to do it this way. I just want you to understand the approach and the philosophy. So when I say heal, I move in the very beginning. I'm teaching them. Later, I do all kind of trick stuff with heal. But I move and have them come with me. In other words, heal means be at my side. And when I move, keep at my side. Now, I have to have that very, very clear in my mind. I can't say heal and then wait for them to do something. I say heal and I begin to move. And I make sure with not a big lug or something like that, that I have them come with me with a little jerk on the leash or whatever. If they're a little afraid, then I'm going to say, good dog, let's go. Come on, you can do this. And if they're just wild and crazy, then I'm not going to do the good dog stuff. I'm going to make sure that they stay with me. So when I move, I say heal. I don't move and then 3 seconds later say heal. I don't say heal and not do anything and then start moving. I need to make sure that I am in this dog's head. And so when I say something, the very next thing that happens is they do it. Whether I have to make them do it by using the leash or just encourage them, but they will do it. And when I say sit, they will sit. And in the very beginning, I use my hand, pull the leash up, push down with my hand to make sure they understand what sit means. The timing of those things is actually really important, because what you want is that dog to understand that when you say something, it doesn't. And when you say we're going to move, it moves. And when you say you're going to sit, it sits. Similarly, when you call it to you, not from 50 feet away, which is everybody's goal, but from 4 feet away, that dog makes an earnest effort to come to you and then sit or heal or whatever you ask. So I'm not going to just break down how you do all the obedience stuff, but I'm going to break down what needs to be in your head. And that is whatever is in that dog's head. So you need them to hear what you say and then carry it out. And if you can act with that kind of clarity, then your dog will understand with that kind of clarity. And when they're doing basic obedience, they're trying to think of 5 things. Okay, other side, leash should be slack, choke chain should be high in the head, and then I should do this, and when your head is like that, then you are not in the head of this dog, and you are merely going through the motions. And when you go through the motions training a dog, you give them an option to tune you out. And when in the very beginning you begin to give these dogs options to tune you out, then you build that into their thinking. Just a little option. Well, he's not even, what is that over there? And they just kind of evacuate mentally the activity. And that's why many times later on when you go to the event, they evacuate, they leave the activity. And then you're wondering what the heck happened. And it started long, long, long ago when you allowed that sort of thought process in there. So obedience in my world is not so much about jerking and pounding and enforcing and correcting. There's an element of enforcing and all that. But what it is creating a certain kind of thought process in that dog that is fair, always fair, and extremely useful, and most of all, very consistent. When I say something, it's important. You need to listen. That's one of the reasons, in the way I see this, is that there isn't much chatter when I work with a dog, and certainly when I do obedience. You know, I've watched people heal, heal, say heal 20 times in the first 30 seconds. That kind of makes heal background noise. Sit, sit, sit. When you repetitively say things, that sort of dilutes the impact of the individual command. So if you say heal and then require that they heal, then heal becomes important and significant. And they hear it and they understand. But if you like a lot of repetitive stuff, or if you like a lot of commands, a lot of terminology, a lot of phrases, a lot of sentences, it's very hard in a dog brain to have extreme clarity with phrases and multiple words and words for all kinds of different things. This is a dog brain now we're talking about. Clarity is the key to success in all this stuff. So if you can just say something one time and enforce it, then that becomes that dog's thought process. Oh, they called me. Oh, they said sit. I have to do that. So one of the most important premises of good dog obedience is this right here. It's the clarity and you being in the head of that dog and making sure that when they hear what you say, that they know what it is. You teach first, and then you make sure that all the time when you say heal or hear or whatever you say, that they do it, and that they do it the first time. What that requires, let's set the dog aside now, because they're fairly simple. What that requires is that you be fully in that moment, fully engaged with that dog, and aware of what it is you're trying to do and how you're going to do it. If you just go out and start jerking your dog around and heel and sit, and it's this kind of messy type thing, again, you open that dog's thinking to not paying full attention to you, to tuning you out just a little bit. So be aware of that, because that's where these big problems that people have all initiated. And then, as I mentioned before, for those of you that have, you know, problems that kind of erupt up, if you have a dog that kind of has an easy thing, it's like a kid in school who just gets material in class real easy. They just listen. It goes right in, you know, and they compute, oh, this is great. And then they can just take the quiz and go, yeah, I know, I understand. And they go through high school or whatever, grade school, college, pretty easy because it's just easy for them. Okay, these guys are very handicapped. They literally are very handicapped because once they hit somewhere where it's not easy, and, you know, wherever, whatever that might be life, might be the job, might be a project, might be a class that they have. When they hit something that doesn't just go in, okay, they don't have any tools to deal with it. They don't know what to do. They have never learned how to overcome a giant obstacle because everything has always been so easy for them. Same thing in sports. You know, if you're on a football team and you only play teams that you guys can just run over, you don't learn how to play the really, really, the teams that are better than you. You don't learn how to go against somebody who's bigger, stronger, faster than you are. And so you are not skilled with that. And then when you run into that, it's a different thing. So when you have dogs that are easy and do learn this and go out and do the work for you, again, they are not equipped for what's going to happen when things are different. And it could be a hunt test. Now we're going to an event. Man, everything's been so easy. I'm feeling pretty good. I think I'll just go over here. And they can tune you out because you have not ever taken the opportunity to just remind them, I'm always present. I'm always here. I'm always significant. Even though you're just doing, you know, you're passing all the tests just great, you still have to give them some things to cope with and deal with and make sure that you have the balance of power over on your side. But to do that, you really need to understand inside that dog's head. And you need to understand that the dog, if allowed just free reign, free thinking, because they're doing so well, then you have opened up the free reign, free thinking thing. And that usually exerts itself and becomes present at the moment you want it least, and the one that you have the least control. So how did I answer the guy who said, how do you get your dogs to go to the line when there's been girls around and they've been bred or whatever and you have all this? And my answer was, again, fundamental obedience. I make sure before I go run a dog somewhere, now it doesn't mean they always pass, heaven knows, I make sure before I go run a dog that every bit of work I've done has made sure that that dog knows that if I say something, it's important. If they start to get a little loose on that, then we work on reminding them that I'm here and what I say is really important. And there's a variety of ways to do that, and a lot of it depends on the individual dog. So I can't sit here and give you all the ways to do that, but it's usually by adherence to stuff, by seeing when they're getting a little loose and free, by reminding them, by enforcing things to alter their thinking and get it off of their own thoughts, their own wishes, their own entertainment, and back on the mutual task at hand. That's not unfair. That's not hard. That's not a brutal thing, but it's a mental thing. And that's why a lot of people miss it. If you told them, you know, just go use electricity and whack the heck out of them or something, people are real comfortable with that. Oh, go get him. I'll get him on some stuff. And, you know, that's kind of a crude way of going about that. The based on your ability to understand an animal and understand yourself and the teamwork thing, you don't have to be crude and brutal and hard, but you do have to be aware this dog just seems mentally a little bit loose. I'm going to have to go to places where I know works best with this dog. Maybe indirect pressure on sit, on blinds. It may be indirect pressure on obedience going to the line. It may be doing some hard stuff. Maybe go out and do a series of six blinds, tight and close. Make them do it right. Make them bear down. Make them realize, oh, I gotta give this maximum effort. I really gotta think about this. I'm not just running out here having a big time. Because just like with you, if you're just partying all the time, you're probably not gonna pass the physics exam. So you have to be aware of your animal and their thinking. But the fundamental obedience starts with that leash stuff. And it starts with how you walk and how you sit and how you communicate. If you go through motions, right, then the dog has an opportunity to tune you out because you've tuned out. So really when dogs do this, folks, and I say this having dog, I had a dog break on me several weeks ago on the honor. You know, not something I normally have. Just broke on me the honor. And I'll be honest, the first thing on my mind is, what have I done this week that has made this dog think that this is an option? I wasn't sitting there going, what's the matter with this dog? He's never done this before. The very second it happens, it was like, man, I've done something. I did something that enabled this dog to just open that, expand that thinking a little bit and think that he could get away with this. So the onus belongs on you and me, the dog trainer and handler. And even though you may not be aware of what you've done, it's something. And I could actually with that dog, and I'll tell you, I looked back at the week with that dog. He'd been doing the best of all my guys on the marks and blinds. And I remember walking to the line all week long, you know, doing practice and walk-ups, and we had flyers and going, oh, he's going to do really well. He always does, yeah, and he would. And I did that very thing I tell people not to do. I relaxed and kind of just said, yeah, he's always good. He's going to be good. And he's a real young dog. And I didn't play that edge of making him have to bear down a little bit and remember, you know, come on, bud, you gotta think here. You got to remember stuff. You got to try hard. You can't just go have a good time. So I dropped the ball on that one. And we do when our dogs are doing these things. And it's not just a simple thing to always dissect exactly what you did. But it's in your dog's thinking that they do this. And that thinking is established in your basic obedience exercises. And that's why when people have a problem and they don't want to come over to me, because that's exactly what I'm going to say, is it's going to come back to your basic obedience. And on a more sophisticated level, it's going to be what you've allowed that dog to think, the kind of thinking you've generated in your interactions with the dog. So that's one of the reasons when I tell people, when you go out and do basic obedience, especially with the young guys, do it for about 2 minutes, maybe three. That's all, not this 10-15 minute thing that people like, because you're going to teach them to completely numb out and ignore you when you do it a long period of time. But if you do it a short period of time, you can stay in the moment the entire time, and you can stay in that dog's head the entire time, and you can make sure that you teach them those responses and those interactions that you want. But you can't, that's just too intense to do for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 minutes. It's too much. And it's going to be too much for you if you haven't done it before. But if you can get into that minute and make sure that your interactions and the timing is what you need and want, and that the clarity is there, that you speak only when necessary, that you praise only when they've tried really hard or they're a little bit unnerved by what's happening, and that you don't interject touching and conversation and involving other people standing around watching, that you just get into that moment with that dog, move into that little dog head, and make sure you're creating the kind of thought processes that you need later on. And fear doesn't belong in here. You know, domination doesn't belong in here, but a little bit of intellect and caring belongs in here. And so that's my soapbox about basic obedience. But that really is the key, guys, to just about everything. And for you Upland guys in the Upland field, and here are the Pointer guys, I'm going to get the rolled eye from the Pointer guys. I realize that. And I mean pointing breed guys. But it's the same thing. When you want that finesse in that Upland field, you want that dog independent, but still not going too far. You want them independent. You want them understanding the game. You want them remembering what the rules are. Is once you detect real bird scent, you stop and you're done. Unless the bird moves and stuff. But, I mean, when you want that without you having to yell or do anything, it's because right here you've gotten into that dog's head early on in your fundamental work, not out in the field, your fundamental work, and showed them what you want and made it very clear and made sure they understood that they couldn't ad lib in the middle of this because really they can't. And this is probably the most difficult aspect of dog training. I mean, it's easier to teach them how to stop on a whistle or wool break them. You know, than it is to understand clarity, consistency, real simplicity. And I mean real simplicity. Far more simple even than you or I are comfortable with. Dog simplicity. They don't need noise, chatter, lots of words, but they need, if you're in their head, and teaching them when I say something, you do it consistently 100% of the time. You can have dogs that are just as impressive as all get out. And then maybe when people come and ask you for some help and you tell them, well, it's probably your basic obedience. You can roll your eyes too, because knowing that it really is their basic obedience. I hope that helps, guys. That's probably the most important talk I've ever given on dogs. But this is how you get whatever results you want out of them. And this goes to all dogs limited only by their intellect. So I hope that's useful. Hope everybody's having a good October, and I'll be back soon.